Alright, before we get into it, this episode is a super casual conversation with one of the guys building on Algorand. We talk about a few things. We talk about DeFi, we talk about the exchange that he's building, we talk about NFTs, we talk about Algorand in general. It's very much a casual conversation. There's no real structure to it. We just kind of bounce around. So let's get into it. Good afternoon, guys. Hope you're all doing well. Today I'm joined by Alex. He's a really cool dude. We've just had a quick little chat before this, I'm super excited for this conversation because I've been looking into some of the work he's doing. I think it's really interesting. It's really cool. It's kind of pushing the boundaries of what's available on Algorand at the moment. I'm really excited for him to tell us more about himself and what he's been doing.
Thanks for having me here. Pleasure to be here.
Cool. So I guess we can kind of start off with a bit about your background. I've looked a bit of what you've done on LinkedIn, but it would be good to know where you really started and what kind of got you to where you are now.
Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to actually learn programming at a very early age, like when I was 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. My dad taught me some things. So I was kind of a hobbyist programmer throughout middle school and high school. Back in like middle school and high school, I'd actually buy programming books and learn how to program. Back then, I thought I knew everything about programming, which is completely not true. I thought I was a good programmer back then. So I actually went to college. Like, I don't have to learn computer science. I'm just going to go to college, do electrical engineering. So I majored in electrical engineering, but I was always drawn more to software. After that, I graduated, had, some various software jobs. I worked at Cisco, originally working on routers. I worked at an e-commerce company. Most recently before this, I worked at a semiconductor company, although I was creating kind of reporting apps, for that, not actually working on the chips. So anyways, in my spare time, and also actually in 2011, I discovered Bitcoin. So I thought it was extremely interesting because basically, they invented a new asset class. I was much younger though back then. So I didn't have any kind of entrepreneurial ambition as much. Yep. But I did put a good chunk of my savings into Bitcoin back in 2011. There are a lot of bubbles up and down because I was foolish. I sold my Bitcoins in 2015, so I didn't I don't have like yachts and stuff. Yeah. But that's how I got into crypto. So I've always kind of been dabbling in crypto.
Yeah.
I discovered Algorand in early 2021, because I wanted to get back into crypto. I had taken a long break from it. I was kind of bummed out about Bitcoin because I had sold it. So I kind of took a long break from crypto and I want to get back into it. And so I'm like, okay, I don't want to just kind of go into whatever's the most well-known cryptocurrency, which would be, Bitcoin or Ethereum. I want to find out which one's actually technically the best one, or at least, could be considered the best one. So I looked into different ones, and I narrowed down to Algorand because it's unique in that it has a very elegant, well-designed core protocol that was designed by one of the leading cryptographers who actually came up with some of the things that were used in Bitcoin even.
Yep.
And I don't need to get too many into those details, but like the technical details, but yeah, it's a very interesting protocol. It's very fast and secure. And also it's decentralized. So I was drawn to that. I've been reading about entrepreneurship on the side for about a decade too. It's an interesting topic. I previously had a side project. So before I started AlgoDex, I started a side project several months before, where I was making like an algorithmic trading thing that was like mixed with, it was like a platform for algorithmic trading, and also where you can then share your algorithms with other people.
Yeah.
So like kind of mixing out with social media is pretty interesting, but I found out it was very difficult to market it. Because there's no Twitter community for like algorithmic trading. Actually, the Reddit for algorithmic trading actually bans people that promote anything that has a login link.
Oh,
so
wow.
You can't even share anything that's not academic, because all the people running the Reddit all come from an academic background. So they're like literally anti-business or something.
Yeah.
Just get, so like, okay, the problem with this is like, I don't want to build this if I can't get like anyone to use it.
Yeah.
There are actually like a few people interested, because I post comments about it. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after I'd get banned, or no, I'd get warned about being banned, and my comments would get deleted, but people would still find out about it. So like, you know, check it out and feel like, oh, this is interesting. Mm-hmm. But like, okay, this is like going to be almost impossible to market. So like, okay, I'm going to take a break.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to figure out what I want to do next, but I have to like do better on the marketing side. So I then started look. This is before I really started looking back into crypto. So I started looking back into crypto, narrowed down Algorand. I'm like, okay, you know, I can probably become a social influencer in Algorand, or at least try to, and just see how that goes. And then after I have an audience, then I can launch a startup.
Yeah.
So I basically started tweeting a lot about Algorand. I was really into Algorand too.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's kind of dual purpose, because I was really into Algorand, so I like talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other purpose is I want to build an audience so I could eventually launch a startup. So I kept, you know, kind of hyping Algorand and so on. And I grew my Twitter following from about like 250 dormant followers to about, I don't know, I have like 11,000 or something.
12,000, yeah.
Mostly people in the Algorand community.
Yeah.
Okay. Or people interested in it. It also turns out a large portion of people interested in Algorand are like VCs, you know, venture capitalists. So there's a lot of money floating around in crypto, and there's a lot of eyeballs watching every new crypto project.
Yeah.
So like, you know, if you start like a random company, like who knows what, let's say a tree cutting company or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Nobody's ever going to hear about that. There's no venture capitalists watching that. You're never going to raise funding. So the only, you just have to like get, you know, customers and revenue coming right away. Yeah. If you launch a crypto startup, there's a lot of investors watching it. So and they're willing to fund all sorts of ideas.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, but anyways, at the time I'm like, okay, you know, when I started it, Algorand had no DEX at all.
Yeah.
And I knew there was some in progress, but I was also very bullish about Algorand. So I'm like, okay, I want there to be a DEX. I have no idea if other people are actually going to finish a DEX or not, but I know that I could probably make a DEX.
Mm-hmm.
It's just writing some code. You know, yeah. I just learned how to do smart contracts, just write some code and get a DEX up. I settled on making a limit order DEX because it's unique and was more interesting to me than making an AMM. Because if you make an AMM, there's already a lot of AMMs.
Yep.
Now, this was also... It kind of, to be honest, in the long run, it kind of handicapped us, because the problem is when you have an AMM, it's super easy to add liquidity.
Yeah.
You just push a few buttons, you can add liquidity. It's also very easy to link to reward systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's liquidity is kind of equal because it's all pooled together.
Yeah.
So with the limit order system, it's more complicated because there's such things as like good liquidity, which is near the spot price.
Yeah.
You know, or like, you know, like, you know, let's say you're like a car dealer. Let's get away from exchange. Like, let's say you run a car dealership, right? If you sell cars close to what the actual market value is of the cars, and then you also are willing to buy cars close to the market value, it's much more attractive for people coming in to actually buy and sell cars.
Yeah.
Right. But if you run like let's say a car dealership, and let's say you're only willing to buy cars like at $500 a car, like nobody's going to sell it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're only selling cars, you know, if you sell like a Toyota Corolla for like $100,000, like nobody's going to buy that.
Yeah.
Okay. So like, that's like low quality liquidity.
Mm-hmm.
Basically if cars are like your liquidity, right. Or buying and selling cars. So like, if you have a limit order exchange, you have to, it's actually quite tricky to get the liquidity, not just in like a total amount, but also close to the spot price.
Yeah.
So that's been one of the challenges we've had. So you have to kind of create quite a lot of software to facilitate that, because you can't really expect people to just sit on their computer and like
buy and sell
carefully, like have multiple browser tabs open, like saying these are the prices it should be. I have to like, oh look, the price fluctuated. Yeah. Now I have to cancel my order, place new orders. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't really expect that.
Yeah.
Of course I didn't know this getting into it. Okay. Cause I didn't really think to that kind of nuance of detail. So that's been kind of one of the challenges, but anyways, at the time there were no DEXs. So I'm like, okay, we're going to build this order book DEX. We gained significant investor interest. So we raised a bunch of funding, which went really well for us. Right now we're just kind of building out the system. So, mm-hmm. so we just, it, in February, I believe we launched on mainnet. I think in April we launched the token.
Yep.
And what the purpose of the token is it's a rewards token to incentivize liquidity on the platform. Mm-hmm. So as people add liquidity, that's good quality liquidity. We kind of have a back-end analytics system that rates all the historical liquidity on the platform. And then decides how much of the Algodex token should go to each market maker who provided liquidity.
Yeah.
So we just launched the reward system like last week or sometime around then. Mm-hmm. So any questions, feel free to cut
in,
by the way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess I can kind of chip in. I mean, I was around when the first sort of like DeFi bit started popping up on Algorand, right? We had like Yuli at the time, and then we had like Tiny Man, and you know, like AMMs are, I would say they're cool, but they're you know, relatively like straightforward. Once you understand how they work, it's almost hard to like innovate on them, and it's hard to kind of like take it up a notch, but with order book DEXs, it kind of just brings a new layer to it, and now that you've mentioned it, you know, I do see how it's difficult to get good quality liquidity. So,
you can go ahead.
which kind of now makes a lot more sense as to why, you know, you have, you know, market making tools, why you have, you know, your rewards program to actually incentivize the liquidity, because there's no real incentive for people to do so, because anyone can set up, you know, like crazily priced orders at, you know, like 0.1% of market value. But that liquidity is not useful to anyone. It just sits there. Yeah.
Right. So yeah, my opinion about limit order exchanges versus something like AMMs is that I think ultimately a long-term potential is that limit order exchanges are better. And just look at the evidence, like the regular financial world outside of crypto mostly uses limit order exchanges.
Yeah.
And the reason is that you can, with much lower total amounts of liquidity, you can still provide an attractive marketplace for people to buy and sell stuff. While with an AMM, you need a large amount of liquidity because anytime someone buys or sells something, it swings the price a lot.
Yeah.
And with the limit order exchange, with the lower amount of liquidity, you can place the orders like very close to the spot price. Mm-hmm. But also, like it allows a lot more nuanced kind of trading too, mm-hmm. because of that. So it's still pretty interesting to compare the two. I think they both have a place. Mm-hmm. So I think they're both pretty useful.
Yeah.
It's just limit order exchanges are just take a lot more work.
Yep.
So I knew it was going to be a lot of work getting into it. It's like really quite a lot.
Yeah, no, I mean, cause like the reason I got kind of interested in especially the market making side of things was, you know, when you're searching up things about trading, you know, market making comes up as part of it. And, you know, you can look at it on, you know, exchanges like, you know, Binance or Coinbase, but a lot of that market making isn't accessible to, you know, like people like us, because I presume a lot of that market making is happening on the inside, you know, by Coinbase, by Binance, where, you know, you don't actually have an edge or you can't compete because, you know, that's where the exchanges are making their money. But seeing a platform where you can take part in that and actually modify your parameters is what was actually quite interesting to me. The one question I had was it like a sort of intentional decision to kind of not just add your own liquidity like completely and do away with like a rewards program?
Yeah, I mean, we have the same problem because if we're going to add liquidity, you know, like you can just add liquidity and just increases your statistics, but it's not really going to provide any utility unless you have a really good market making platform. And also, if we're the only ones adding liquidity, it's not really going to grow the platform. So if you take a longer term view, you really need other people to add liquidity other than just us doing it. And then also, you know, if we have the rewards program and then we're also the ones adding like a really large amount of liquidity, nobody else is going to get a lot of rewards because then we're the ones just giving rewards to ourselves. Like, so we are adding like a small, pretty small amount of liquidity at the moment, but again, we don't, you know, we don't want to gobble up all the rewards because the rewards is supposed to be like a protocol where, you know, we're not just going to like block our own addresses from getting rewards because we are putting money at risk if we do provide liquidity. So it's kind of a complicated situation, but basically, I mean, ultimately, like we just need a really, really good platform with really good working software and just has to kind of work seamlessly, and then also have kind of the tool set up so people can run market making bots. So we have an example bot that works. It does need some improvements though. We're kind of taking that code right now and we're turning that into a user interface bot, which, and all this is open source, by the way. So you can just kind of clone it and modify it too if you want to. And we're also in the future with the bot. You know, it's its own rabbit hole because the bot doesn't have to just trade on AlgoDex. It could actually could program an arbitrage and aggregator functionality, and so it can, you know, the bot could actually profit by like, you know, buying cheap somewhere else and selling on a different DEX. Because as far as I know, there's not any really good, at least public bots on Algorand. I know there's people that privately have them, but I'm not aware of any really good like open source ones.
Yeah, no, not from my.
So we're gonna build that. That's At first, it's gonna just work on AlgoDex, but then we're gonna add more features so it can trade everywhere. And then also, you know, as you provide liquidity on AlgoDex, you also then get the rewards.
Yeah, no, I've been using the Market Maker for about maybe around 2 weeks, and you know, at first I was a bit confused setting it up until I figured out what I was doing wrong. Especially, you know, I don't do like a whole bunch of, you know, development work, so you know, it was in, you know, JavaScript, so you know, that was something new, unfamiliar to me, like setting all of that stuff up. And you know, it works most of the time. Sometimes it runs into errors, which I haven't been asked to troubleshoot. I just wrote a batch script that just restarts the program if it crashes, and
That's pretty funny.
it's been working fine for me, you know.
Yeah, I do that too. I run it in like a process manager, so it just auto restarts if it has an issue. But it's imperfect, by the way. So it, like, for example, I think so it uses the Tinyman prices to determine where to set the prices on AlgoDex. But part of the issue is that the way it pulls the prices from Tinyman is that Tinyman doesn't update those live. So it could possibly be out of sync with like what the real prices are. So you just have, I'll say, is just be careful. Like, we're actually going to modify it with the GUI bot so that it uses the live prices from the blockchain, which is what it should have been doing the whole time. But I kind of intentionally kept it the bad way on purpose, almost as like an Easter egg kind of trading badly on purpose so people can go into AlgoDex and buy things at slightly good prices occasionally.
Fine. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
Because
Yeah.
we're the ones providing liquidity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
like
I get you.
people know that occasionally, like accidentally good deals are going to pop up on AlgoDex, they're going to go on and buy them. It's kind of almost like a marketing budget. But in the like actual bot though, that we're going to like, you know, that kind of thing only happens occasionally though, but like it works most of the time. But we're just going to make it read live from the blockchain. It's pretty easy fix.
I mean, at some point, will it stop exclusively pulling prices from Tinyman, or will it kind of look at all other DEXs,
Yeah, it's gonna
or do you want your
look at all
price to be
DEXs.
like
So,
standalone?
well, it's gonna it's going to read the prices directly from, so we have a backend custom built blockchain indexer. That's a 2.0 backend.
Yeah.
And that right now, that basically stores every single block and then indexes all the blocks using CouchDB. Yeah. And it indexes all the Tinyman trades. So the moment a trade on Tinyman happens, it indexes that. And then you can get the latest price from Tinyman directly from the cached version of the blockchain. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're going to store all the DEXs into it in a later version. Yeah. So then you can pick where you want the price feed to come from. Because it has to know, like, basically, whichever place has the most liquidity should be like the source of truth on what the real market price is.
Okay.
Generally.
Yeah. So there's potential for it to be almost an aggregator of sorts as well, where you
even better than aggregator.
Weighted. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the bot's even better than aggregator because you can just leave it running and it'll arbitrage for you. While the other Algorand aggregators, you have to manually go on and like trade, you know what I mean? Mm. So you have to, like, it takes manual steps, whereas with the bot, it can just be running in the background, just waiting for the perfect time to do something.
Yeah, no,
it does. So, yeah, it's going to have that functionality. So we're just going to keep kind of iterating on the bot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, my only current, I don't want to call it a gripe, but is, you know, there's no sort of self-balancing. So if I put, you know, everything, all of my liquidity into like one buy order and one sell order, if the order gets filled, the bot just kind of like stops, or it still works, but you're no longer getting your like your rewards because you've
lost, that's something else, side of liquidity. Yeah, it's something else we have to do for sure. I've heard other people mention that too.
That might have been me even on the Discord. Yeah. So I'm personally just trying to like duct tape together a solution using, I think, Alamex, which is one of the other aggregators. I managed to get an API key off their team. So I've been trying to tinker with that. So as kind of just a stopgap until, you know, the market maker bot actually comes out properly. Yeah. One question I had was, what sort of like utility are you looking at for the AlgoDex token going forwards, or what's its aim? Because surely it's not just a rewards token once, you know.
So for now, it's just rewards token. Ultimately, it's going, like, we're going to be launching other products too that are unannounced. So I don't want to get into it, but it's ultimately going to kind of be an ecosystem token that will in some ways benefit you know, whoever holds it across any products we have.
Yeah.
Also it, you know, by holding it based on the rewards equation, you get even more of the rewards too.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's that incentive also, but yeah, it's good. Like, you know, Algonaut, the company behind AlgoDex, we're planning on launching different things.
Okay.
So basically it'll just be different incentives.
Yeah.
Holding it.
Interesting. And like at the moment, AlgoDex doesn't have any fees. Is that gonna change in the future maybe? Or
so in the future there's going to be fees. Mm-hmm. And those will generally, you know, the plan is that holders of the AlgoDex token will then get most of the fees, basically, like the market makers and the AlgoDex token holders. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Also, I forgot to mention, it's going to be a governance token as well. Okay. So we're going to have like a voting platform for governance decisions, and then you can use a token to vote on them.
Okay, nice. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm out of questions for now. But yeah, no, like I heard about it, the project, you know, much further ago, but I didn't really understand it. And then I did see the market maker bot at that time, I think, but I just couldn't be bothered. Like there's periods of time where I'm like, yeah, I wanna, you know, deploy this new thing. I wanna try it out. At that point, I was like, no, I really can't be bothered. I'll just leave it for now. I'll come back to it, you know, another day. And then yeah, I think I did see something on Twitter about you guys. And then I was like, all right, let me take another look at this. Let me actually try to get it working. And yeah, you know, it is a, for me, it's sort of a, I would say like a love-hate relationship with this sort of technical stuff, where when I'm looking at it from the outside, I'm like, I don't want to do this. It's going to, you know, take forever. But once I kind of get into it, I just kind of get sucked into it. And
yeah,
I get really tunnel visioned on the thing that I'm doing until it's done.
Yeah, I'm like that too.
Yeah. And then again, I'm just like, for like another like few weeks, I'm like, I don't want to look at a piece of code again. but the past week or two have been pretty good, where, you know, I've been tinkering with things and I've been enjoying it quite a lot.
Yeah, it's one reason why we open sourced everything too, is to make it easy for people to tinker with things and kind of really understand the system, and just kind of make it more of an open platform. Mm-hmm. So like the market making bot codes all open source, the backend's open source, SDK's open source. Yeah. We're actually going to open source the rest of the front end very soon. We're probably going to launch Pure Wallet support today, most likely today, otherwise probably tomorrow. There's just like one small bug somewhere. Not with the wallet. The wallet's finally, we sorted out all the issues with integrating it. But there's just one other UI bug, because basically we did a really big refactoring of the entire front end and integrating the SDK into the front end. And then with that, we're also integrating the wallet. So it's like a ton of code changes at once, which has kind of been causing some delays. Trying to finish that up.
Yeah. I guess moving a little bit away from AlgoDex, coming a bit to Algorand as a whole, what sort of things are you enjoying in the ecosystem, or what things have you been looking? Is there anything that's caught your eye recently in terms of projects or updates or?
It's a good question. Trying to think, because there's so much happening in the Algorand ecosystem.
Yeah.
I think what Guard is doing is pretty interesting. With their algorithmic stablecoin type of thing.
Yep.
Although I haven't myself used it that much. So part of my problem is I also get like tunnel vision. So I like to just kind of hyper focus on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And not use like a ton of other stuff. So I kind of dabble around occasionally, but I don't like look into like exact. I don't keep up.
Yeah.
With all the other projects, because I'm not like a crypto analyst type, so I don't keep up to date with like the news of like, oh, this project did this thing, this project did this thing. Mm-hmm. With Algorand itself, though, I think one interesting thing I saw is that they're supporting randomness now in the smart contracts, so you can access that without having to build your own Oracle.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's really interesting, because you can make all sorts of like lottery mechanisms and stuff like that, like natively with the smart contract code.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think there's, I think I would speak to someone. I think there's some sort of shortcomings alongside it. I think there's, you know, you can kind of see like eight blocks ahead or something, or eight rounds, either forwards or backwards, and that can have some cause some issues if you're trying to do things sort of live. So it could work really well for, you know, you pick your numbers, and then, you know, at the end of the week it draws. That's something that could probably work a lot better. But for something that happens, you know, live in the moment, I think there might be some tweaks that need to be made. I think that's really awesome. You know, the state proofs is, I think, probably one of the other big changes that has come around. Especially with we're getting platforms like Milcomida, which is like the layer 2 Algorand for like EVMs, compatibility. I think that will probably support it or be a big help, especially with like bridges.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I think it'd be interesting is if Algorand kind of becomes like a dominant, almost like de facto layer 2 for other layer 1s. So if Algorand gets really good bridging infrastructure that's easy for you know, other blockchains to plug into, then, you know, since Algorand is a really good, technically good blockchain and has its own ecosystem, every other blockchain that exists could you know, bridge assets into Algorand, and then also leverage all of Algorand's security, all Algorand's applications and ecosystems, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that that'd be a really interesting approach. If that's like how Algorand grows to become more dominant, if it's like becomes through all the bridges, becomes more like a really good kind of middleman. But then once everything uses as a middleman, you know, eventually enough people might say, okay, why not just use Algorand directly? You know, so that could actually be an interesting way how Algorand grows.
Go ahead.
Because my, well, I'm just saying my, my personal opinion, I mean, I'm sure this topic's controversial to some people, but I don't think NFTs alone, like Algorand's really kind of promoting NFTs right now. My personal opinion is that that doesn't have like the most long-term potential for Algorand to just do NFT, to just kind of focus on NFTs. I think it's kind of like a big distraction. My own opinion. I think like Algorand has the potential at least to become kind of a, like, you know, the blockchain that kind of is like the backbone of the global economy. Like that's the ultimate potential of Algorand. So like it's focusing on like NFT, like, you know, NFTs and stuff like that are kind of more gimmicky, and it kind of like detracts away from Algorand. But like,
I'm
more interested. What you mean.
Because like with NFTs, I'll take like Fox Finance for example. They have their line of NFTs, which you know, if you're using the platform, can give you benefits, which is great. But the NFTs themselves aren't gonna make people move over from other chains. There's no one gonna be on Ethereum or Solana and being like, oh hey, Fox Finance has NFTs. Let's.
I mean, that's just how I see it. I could very well be wrong because I know NFTs are a big thing.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of with you on in terms of like how I feel about NFTs. And you know, I've bought NFTs. I'm like, yeah, this one looks cool. You know, I've tried to engage in the communities, but it's I find it really hard to do so, to like keep in touch with the communities, seeing where the project is going. A lot of them seem, you know, it's a piece of art, which is fair enough. Buy it if you like it, sure. But I don't think that is gonna be the thing to actually drive, you know, like mass adoption. Because even in the real world, if you compare, you know, like the fine art market compared to the financial markets, it's a drop in the pool. And I think you can kind of extrapolate using that and say, you know, finance might be something which is probably going to have a bigger impact long term compared to NFTs. NFTs get a lot of, I would say, attention because of hype. You know, we've been around like Ethereum, you know, your Bored Apes, your CryptoPunks. They've caused a lot of hype, but I don't think they will alone drive the mass adoption that we're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, they might be like a stepping stone, I guess, but at best.